A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
There's only one place to start, Conor, and that is the great Kilshima. Beat Hollymount Carrimore, who were unbackable favourites. Did a job on them, you could say, as well. 20 points to 112. Let's talk about this, Conor. Why won't we talk about this in a final now in 2 weeks' time?
Can we do a whole show on this, Willie? Can we? I've detailed analysis of the game and everything. I know it was a great win. Like, Hollymount Carrimore were deservedly favourites. They're traditionally they're a senior club, really. They got relegated to intermediate last year, and they have been in an intermediate all Ireland final in recent years as well, beaten by St. Mary's, Brian Sheehan's club in Kerry. So very strong club. So they were deservedly, I think they were something like 3-1 on to going into the game to win. But we've been gradually building since the start of the year. Very slow start to the group stage. We drew our first two games, and then we kind of have caught fire a little bit since then. So I'm hoping I'm not jinxing it, but we've kind of been getting better as we go along. So yeah, just delighted to be into a final. We scored 20 points and we had 9 different scorers. So you can't really complain really about that against the favourites. So happy out.
Yeah, it's not going. Were you one of the scorers out of 9?
I was not. At the very end, I got up the pitch and I was close enough to... I was close enough to the goals, but my calves both gave way on me. I got cramp in the two of them. So I just hand passed off. Now, a score came out of it, thank God. But as soon as I gave the hand pass, I put the signal over to the manager to take me off. So that was just into injury time. So
right. Well, that's all good. Did you get any sort of a slap at Darren Cohen? Like, I mean, this is Intercounty, one of the best point kickers at Intercounty level in the game. And he's playing intermediate.
To be honest, I didn't need to get a slap at him, Willie, because our fullback, I'll give him a mention here, Donovan Cosgrove, former Mayo underage fullback as well, former Mayo underage player as well, did really well in him, got man the match, and actually got up at the end of the game to hand pass a point over the bar to kind of seal the, it was like our insurance point at the end as well. So he had a massive game. So yeah, Darren Cohen had been on fire coming into the game. I think he'd scored 527 in 4 games. Like, Darren Cohen at that level, he's good enough at senior, so intermediate, he's quite strong. So he still scored, to be fair to Darren, he still scored about 1-4, 1-5. He got a penalty as well, but we managed maybe to keep a lid on him compared to what he had done in the other game. So yeah.
He only got 2 points from play, you were telling me before the show. So stop getting so stop trying to be so nice here.
Diplomatic.
Right. Well, we'll stick with Mayo here while we're on a roll, but we won't go to town on it because she's not more convincing winners against Ballina. Like, I mean, led this the whole way through, and it wasn't really as much of a contest as everybody would have expected. And I suppose when two teams are evenly matched, Ballina did a little bit of trash talking before the last one, scraped over the line with a strong finish. Like, it was probably set up for a Knockmore win.
Yeah, the scoreline, to be honest, Willie, like, Knockmore won by 4 points. The scoreline doesn't really do Knockmore justice. And And to be perfectly honest, it was a repeat, really, of the pattern of the game in the group stages that Knockmore lost. And in that game, Knockmore had been the better team for, I'd say, 55 minutes. Pádraig Ó Huaire, to be fair to him, had a very strong finish to that game. I think Balna got over the line by 2 points, but Knockmore had been the better team. So in this repeat game in McHale Park, Knockmore just built up a better lead and never let Balna back into it. And the only fear I had for Knockmore was when, I think it was in the, might have been just before the water break in the second half, and the keeper, Colm Reap, he had a short kick out intercepted, and had the Balna forward that intercepted the ball, had he tried to develop it further, he would have had a 3-on-1 with the keeper. But instead, he tried to lob him straight away, and it didn't even go over the bar, it went wide. And like, to be honest, that just kind of summed up Balna's day, really. And at that point, you knew that that they weren't going to get back into it. But listen, don't let that take away from Knockmore. They were brilliant against Ballintober and brilliant again yesterday. Like, Ray Dempsey's the manager. He's a son playing. He's been playing very well. And they have a load of 18, 19, 20-year-olds, really strong underage system in Knockmore. So that's bearing fruit. So I know, like, Brafey will... I haven't checked the odds. I'd say Brafey might be going in his favourites given their path to the final. But I think, having seen them in the last two games, that Knockmore are going to take a serious stop.
Yeah, well, in fairness, Knockmore have just beaten Ballintubber and Ballina, so it's not like they got an easy one. I was reading in the match report about this one that Kevin McLaughlin wore number 8, and he kind of played at centre half back in a free role. And I was just thinking to myself, this is a message to any club manager out there. Never let an inter-county player have a free role, no matter what situation ever arises. Man mark them, double mark them if you want. Do not ever allow an inter-county player wrangle a free role for himself, no matter what way it works out.
And I'm very surprised that Ballina allowed that to happen, because it's not as if they're short of people that could have marked Kevin McLaughlin. But the first half, Willie, he was absolutely outstanding. Like, everybody's familiar with Kevin McLaughlin, his ability to kind of break tackles around the midfield, around the half forward line, whatever. And the memorable sight of the first half was just Kevin McLaughlin driving through the middle past the sea of Ballina bodies trying to chase him. And I think he kicked 3 points in the first half.
Wow.
Absolutely outstanding. And then I don't know, did he kick any in the second half, but he was really crucially involved in everything Knockmore did well. So like, Brafey, you would imagine, knowing Kevin McLaughlin anyway, and having seen the damage that he did to Balna yesterday, will, you know, take measures to try and prevent that. And
they'll have to. Like, it's an old Armagh tactic back in the day of Kieran McGeaney. So Tony McAtee used to wear number 15 on his back. And Tony would come back and play centre half back, and McGeaney would be the free man on the half back line. And his distribution was great, you know, his organisation, his leadership. And it's like, that's at inter-county level, right? So the other team will have a free man on the other side. It's up to them to do whatever to do with it. But to allow, I presume Knockmore are bringing a forward into midfield and then allowing, you know, Kevin McLaughlin. Just don't let that happen. Don't let it happen. It's Kevin McLaughlin. Like, I mean, coming with his pace coming onto the play there in a free role is madness. And it's actually, wasn't it Stephen Rochford, when he took over first, tried to develop that role for Kevin McLaughlin by playing him as a sweeper?
That's right. And I suppose, like, but the way that Knockmore played yesterday was more, well, not that they didn't serve their full forward line with kick passes, whatever, but when Mayo tried that with Stephen Rochford, it didn't quite work at the start anyway. It didn't. Kevin McLaughlin had been used to doing his best work at that level around half forward and kind of, as I said, servicing the full forward line with the good kick passes that he's capable of. But I suppose at that level, like, inter-county is a step above. At that level, Kevin McLaughlin's going to run riot. And he did yesterday. And to be fair, I mentioned Ray Dempsey there and his son, Conal Dempsey. I think he's only 18 or 19. But the way Knockmore plays, without being ultra-defensive, they get a lot of men behind the ball. And so it wasn't only Kevin McLaughlin that was running from deep. I thought Conal Dempsey did that very well as well. And to be honest, not just because he's a high-profile father, but the role he plays kind of reminds me of what Mark McHugh used to do for Donegal in 2012, back when they won the All-Ireland that time. So he has the energy and the legs to kind of be all over the pitch, starting attacks from deep and then getting on the end attacks at the other end of the pitch. So it's not just... McLaughlin was definitely the driving force, but it wasn't just him. But as well as that, Willie, they've a very deadly inside forward line as well. So they've threats from all over the pitch. So again, like, if I had to call it now, I'd probably say Knockmore over Brafey. It'd be very tight, but I'd probably give them the nod.
Right. Brafey obviously have never won it. Knockmore, obviously one of the big traditional teams that won an All-Ireland club, but 23 years since they've won it. So listen, somebody's going to kind of, it's a bit more of a novel pairing. I know Brafey and Knockmore have been in the finals recently, but not against each other. You know, it's Casabar Mitchell's kind of have been beaten Brafey anyways, I'm pretty sure. They bullied Westport to get into the mix. Colm Flynn scored scored 7 points, 3 from play. He's from Longford. How long is he with them? I didn't realise he was from Longford.
I'm not sure how long he's with them, Willie, to be honest. I'll be perfectly honest. I only started taking notice of him this year.
He's the big long lad, is he? The big long fella who's got a nice...
Very accurate guy in Grafie full forward line. So, he's not going to make a devastating impact on general play, but he's accurate both from play and from free. So he scored 7 points at the weekend. But Willie, to be honest, that was the difference between Brafey and Westport. You mentioned Brafey bullying Westport then, but Westport were incredibly wasteful. They only lost by 2 points in the end, and especially in the first half, they kicked wide after wide after wide. And I had thought that Westport were going to go all the way this year. I'd seen them a couple of times, were very impressive. But the one failing they have in their locker is that sometimes they're not clinical enough. And it didn't really come back to haunt them this year until they had to play Brafe, until they met a really seasoned team in Brafe. And Brafe were then experienced enough to see it out. But definitely Westport will have huge regrets about the way the first half went in particular.
We don't know too much about this game because Mayo streaming crashed, so obviously nobody can see the match, and then you're watching it on your stream. And what did you lose a full second half of it?
Yeah, so there was a free 4 minutes into the second half, so basically nobody got to see whether that went over the bar. That was the running joke on Twitter, because anytime you went to refresh your page, it just went back to the free again, so it got stuck in midair. So I'd say a lot of people like myself instantly just switched to live Midwest commentary of the game, which, to be fair, was very entertaining. But just on Mayo GAA, Willie, I understand that during the week, because of difficulties that they've had previously, they hired a new company to provide the streaming service for the weekend. But that obviously went a little bit to top of the weekend, I'm afraid. But so from 4 minutes on until nobody saw, from 4 minutes on to the end of the game. And I don't, because it had been on Mayo GAA TV, I don't think there was any alternative, stream of the game on any of the club Facebook pages or anything like that.
They're usually a waste of time, those Facebook ones. Yeah. That's desperation. If you're looking for a stream on Facebook, you're desperate. You've kind of exercised all other options and there's nothing going on, and you're desperately putting something into Facebook to try and get the stream. Ballyhale Shamrocks were on TV yesterday. Very disappointed with this one, in that this game was literally over after 8 minutes. What's the point in continuing? Blow it up, ref. 4 goals in the first 8 minutes. Here's the thing again with intercounty players. Colin Fennelly, everybody knows he's unstoppable at club level. He's almost unstoppable at times at intercounty level, depending on the fullback from the other team, whether they can manage him physically or not. He's a physical specimen, and you have Clara just leaving him one-on-one inside, and then you have TJ Reid, and you have him running off Colin Fennelly, and you have him just being marked or given a bit more space. And I just don't get it. If you look at Killadangan, they hammer Drummond Inch, they put a sweeper, this fella Decky McGrath, in front of Seamus Callanan. And I just can't get it. Remember Boris Ali last year in the All-Ireland final against Ballyhale? At least they had a sweeper dropping back in front of Colin Fennelly. The idea that a club manager would think that a player can handle Colin Fennelly. He set up 3 of the 4 goals in the first 8 minutes. That's game over. And you're not getting somebody back in and around this fella. It makes no sense to me.
I can only imagine that the reasoning, Willie, was that, Ballyhale have also Owen Reid, TJ Reid, Owen Cody. The fear might be that they've so many players capable of doing damage that if you take your focus solely on Colin Fennelly, that you're asking for trouble. But it's just, if you were to put a sweeper there as well with Colin Fennelly, it would be a different sweeper, I would say, to what you might do for Seamus Callanan, for Drummond Inch, in that the damage that Colin Fennelly was doing was when ball was lumped right in on him. So if you were to put a sweeper there, literally put right in front of him, not to necessarily cut out the pass, but to try and, even if he does win the ball, which he will do in a lot of cases because he's so physically strong, that it's not just one defender trying to kind of muscle him out of the way. There's two of them there, because you saw from the first goal yesterday, I felt so sorry for the Clara defender, because he was trying his damnedest, but Colin Fennelly was just swatting him aside like a fly. He's so strong. Yeah. Using his back, trying to muscle him out of the way, and then just that delightful little dink flick up for, I think it was Owen Cody to put in the first goal. But at that level, Colin Fennelly is just, he's a one-man wrecking ball, really.
He definitely is. A lovely little soccer chip up, all right, for that first goal. TJ Reid, very, very questionable amount of steps for his goal. It's just he finished it so well. I'm sure the referee was kind of thinking, ah, look, that's a beautiful finish. We'll leave that one stand. Did you see Brian Cody and DJ Carey up in the stand? Like, I mean, I saw Anthony Cunningham, the camera went to him in Dr. Hyde Park. How are these managers? Like, I mean, there is nobody. Are they getting in by saying they're doing some local radio work or something? I presume there's some way of getting them in there, but like, I mean, if there's either nobody at these games or there's nobody at these games.
Yeah, and it's especially relevant when you consider that, like, there's members of extended panels that probably aren't getting to games now. Like, you know, it's not as if allowances are being made for these guys. I mean, like clubs can only tog a panel of 24, and I think clubs are limited to 40 people. So in a lot of cases. You know, there's players that have trained all year and aren't getting in, whereas the manager's getting in. I can only assume that there's some special dispensation, Willie, whether it's media coverage or what. Like, I know James Horan and Kieran McDonald have been at most of the games in Mayo. James Horan has been, you know, giving interviews to Mayo GATV. That might have kind of sealed his
path. That's it.
But I don't know, you could do with some clarification on that, because people are, you know, some people that have been involved with these clubs all year are going to get pissed off that they can't get into these games, and the county manager seems to have special treatment that he can get in instead.
Well, that's it. Like, I mean, you mentioned that Selbridge manager, David Clare, he was given out about this at the weekend. He said, I had to tell four of my squad they couldn't come here today. He was telling this on Sunday Sport. Just terrible stuff. And there's some of the worst phone calls I made. Conor Doyle, I'll name check him, got his cruciate done, and I had to ring him to tell him, no, you can't come, Conor. Like, I mean, if Jack O'Connor was in watching those games and four of the squad weren't, like, I mean, I don't. Like, let's call a spade a spade. These lads are all training together. Let the two squads in, and if it's 112 or 13, big bloody deal. Like, I mean, yeah. Christ, we're talking about not letting supporters in. Come on, don't not allow some bloody panel members not in. There is no way I would stick to that.
No, absolutely. And you shouldn't have to, Willie. No, listen, we can get into it. We've talked enough about the crowds not being allowed into games and how much of a shame that is. But like, for players that have literally trained all year and been involved with the team all year, and to be honest, there might be players in some cases that would have been a tight call as to whether they made the 24 or not. And then, you know, the 24 that actually togging the day, and some of them mightn't be able to come in. It's absolutely not fair. And it just, like, it drove home to me at the weekend, you know, that we played in McHale Park, and just like the size and the expanse of the stadium. And then once a game is over, it's just, you're just like a stadium that can hold, like, you know, 30,000 people. And there's, you know, there's maybe nine of your teammates allowed in the extended panel allowed in the stand. It's just,
do you have to, when your game is over, do you have to get the hell out of there for the next game to start, or else all your squad will be there? The other team in the intermediate squad will be there, and then the two senior squads, that'll put it over 100.
So what we were told, so we had to tog out in one section of the stand. And then before the game started, we had to move to another section of the stand. And then when the game was over, I think Brafey, who were on after us, had gone to the section we were in at first. And then we had moved to the top of the stand out of their way. But like, once the game is over, you're on the pitch for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. It's like there's not a warm down. It's not as if you're told to get off, but it's just, you just instantly go to the like, it's so kind of anticlimactic. There was a couple of our officials there, but like, you know, you celebrate with your teammates on the pitch, and that's it. And you know, 10 minutes later and you're in the car, because you don't even go to the dressing room afterwards. It's just literally put your clothes on. It's just and you know, you're heading for home then. It just really kind of, I know this has been ongoing for a long time, and like, we've been talking about it for a long time, but it was only when I was involved myself that I really kind of felt how anticlimactic it could be there at the weekend, you know. And like, feeling sorry for, I don't know what the case is in Selbridge. Like, I suppose our extended panel would stretch to about 30-35, and we always make sure that they can get in. They're part of our 40. But maybe there's clubs with bigger panels, obviously, that might have more than that training, and there's lads going to miss out every week, and that really is a shame.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, I suppose if Selbridge are allowed 40 and he's only allowing 24, that means there's 16 extra people coming in. So maybe the Selbridge manager, David Clare, needs to kind of pick and choose what extra people he's bringing in rather than his players. Is that another angle to look at that?
I see. I don't know what the case is in. I don't know. Is there different interpretations? I was like speaking to one of the lads in the office, Niall, actually, who won the Tipperary Senior B semi-final at the weekend in Semple Stadium. And he said that every player got one ticket. So they could give to a family member to go in.
Really?
So I'm not sure what the situation is between different counties. When I saw that some of the players in Selbridge had to miss out, I wonder why, because Well, our 40 has to include our management team and a couple of officials. So the way it works out for us is that, like, our club chairman and...
Good luck to the club chairman. I wouldn't entertain him. I wouldn't have him on the list at all. Any of those club officials, good luck. Watch it on the stream. Watch it on the stream at home. Well, what practical purpose has he got at the match that day? None. They walk around like they're important on match day. I remember when we used to go to Croke Park with Laois, Leinster final, you'd have three or four of them sitting on the bloody team bus, all decked out like they're important. And they've no role on the day, other than they're the officials. Like, I mean, I wouldn't have any of them anywhere near a team.
Well, when you compare it to the lads that have been training all year, you know, and they're missing out, that seems unfair. I suppose in our case is that, like, it works out nicely that all of our extended panel is catered for, all our management is catered for, and then the last two or three places are made up of club officials. That's our 40. So, but that's, as I said, that seems to be the case in Mayo. I don't know what the case is. I don't know what the case is otherwise. But interesting that you say, Willie, just before the game, the last day, I don't know if we're going to get to, like, supporters again, but we were warming up in the back pitch in McHale Park on Saturday, and the back pitch extends on to Davitt House in Castlebar. And just as we were warming up, some guy slipped under the fence and then just stood about 10 yards away from us while we were, you know, warming up and doing our stretches. So there was stewards kind of dotted all around McHale Park to stop people, you know, to stop people trying to get in different entrances. So I don't know, his story trying to... up to pretend he was part of our management team and not get noticed.
Ah, excellent. I really have time for that. There was a picture there of two supporters in McHale Park being escorted out. I don't know how they got in. Maybe it was the same tactics of him. I actually saw pictures from Dr. Hyde Park. These lads broke no rules. They were pulling up vans beside the wall and standing on the top of the van. I saw another ladder put up against the rail. He had a ladder from the graveyard. You know the graveyard in front of Dr. Hyde? He had a ladder up against the wall at the end of that. Like, I mean, all this stuff is going on, and look, it's just a little bit. It's a bit disappointing, and I'm sure it'll have changed the next time. Interesting. Some managers, I saw some quotes from Willie Maher, who's the Coolin manager. They're kind of using it as motivation for not having supporters there. He was talking about Con O'Callaghan being a super player. He says he has brothers playing, he has cousins playing. It's his family, his community. And we spoke about it before the game, the importance of hurling to the Coolin community today, not being able to go to matches. So maybe managers, look, you know, managers are just mad to find something different, I suppose, to say the thing. So then instead you can shout about doing it for your teammates and do it for the people who couldn't even get into the match today.
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said that hasn't been used in motivation. I'm not critical of Willie Maher and going to the ins and outs of it. But,
yeah. You've relations who've sweat blood and tears for this club and they can't even get in. Let's do it for them today and make them happy. Actually, you know how these speeches, buddy, will go. Oh, funnily enough, Tullerone, we were feeling bad for Tullerone last week that they were in a relegation semi. They won it anyway. They beat Danesford by 119 to 112. So Tullerone are going to be playing senior next year. Roar Innes Tiog, I get the pronunciation right. They beat Greg Ballycallan after extra time. So they're safe as well. So it's Danesford against Greg Ballycallan, who are in the relegation match. There are two one-sided semi-finals in Tipperary. Killadangan hammered Drumminch. Obviously, Drumminch beat Borrisaleigh. That was a local derby. They obviously raised their game for that huge game and then weren't able to repeat it. Killadangan obviously were beaten in last year's final. Their manager, Brian Lawler, says, we're talking about motivation here, Connor. So they're not used. Brian Lawler might be using supporters as a motivation, but he's not as outward about it, because his main motivation is, he said, we're a full year living with last year. It was a great victory for Borrisaleigh, but we just weren't happy with our performance on the day. So it was a big motivating factor for us all year, and we wanted to get back there. So they are back there. You know, like, I mean, using the motivation from the previous year, you often see it. You know, it's the team that wins it switches off the following year. The team that loses it, you know, keeps kind of going.
Yeah, but it's strange. Like normally, you know, it's understandable motivation, to be honest. But I just wonder, did the pandemic not make an impact in saying that it's last the whole year? Did they not take a break from worrying about what happened last year for while they were stopped training for 4 months? And maybe then, once they started again, they could start picturing what happened against Borrisaleigh last year and use it to spur them to success. But, well, these motivational tactics sound great when they work. And in these cases, they're obviously working for these lads as well.
Yeah, they definitely are. So Loughmore Castellani are going to play them in the final. They hammered Nina on Saturday, and their star forward, John McGrath, he joins us on the line now. John, how's it going?
Oh, Colin, how are you?
Good, good. Come here, you look like a team that means business this year in both football and hurling.
Yeah, I suppose there in the last couple of weeks, it's the championships have progressed a lot, and we find ourselves at the business end now. Sure, we're moving really well, but I think just we're probably used to playing games every week, and the format this year has come out that way, and it's probably suiting us. It's something we're used to and really enjoying at the moment.
Yeah, you had two extra time losses in both the hurling and the football last year, one in a semi-final and another in a preliminary quarter-final. Like, I mean, I don't know if you used that motivation from last year this year.
Yeah, certainly, I suppose. It's a tough way to exit the championship. When you're at the latter stages and been beaten in extra time is tough. So, it's in the back of your mind, I suppose, especially when Tullamore knocked us out last year in extra time, and we played them a couple of weeks ago. It's not something you overly dwell on, but it's something that would be in the back of your mind, and it would give you extra motivation when you come up against them teams again and trying to progress in the competitions.
Yeah, were you expecting Saturday to be that one-sided, John? Like, I mean, it ended up being pretty one-sided. I know Barry Heffernan went off and Jake Morris got red-carded, but like the game was over pretty much at that stage anyway.
Yeah, look, I suppose we wouldn't have expected it to turn out like that, especially watching Nina the previous week. They done, I suppose, to Sarsfields what we did to them. And, it's something that it can happen there. We started really well, and we were winning battles all over the field. And, look, I suppose they were down Hugh Maloney at the start. And like you said, the couple of boys went off. That doesn't help either, I suppose. At club level, if you are missing a couple of guys, it can make it very tough. But no, look, I suppose we're just happy to be where we are. It's a while since we've been there, so we're just really looking forward to that now.
Yeah, so Saturday was your eighth weekend in a row, and you have Mile Rovers next week, which will be your ninth. And you mentioned you got a good start. Usually, you would think when you're on the road every week, you might have to play your way into games. Like, how are you getting good starts when, you'd imagine you're the ones that should be a bit more sluggish?
Yeah, it's a funny one, I suppose. It's probably been an issue for us at times where people had said that we start slow, and it's near the end of the game, we're trying to get back into it. But yeah, look, I don't think there's any major secret. We're just really enjoying playing the games, and I think it helps us to be playing every week as well. I find it easier to manage. Like we don't have any weight, and you're just doing what you're training for. Like you just want to be playing games. We just go out and get stuck in from the off, and just try and work as hard as we can and get on to as much ball as possible.
We were talking to Simon Donoghue on the show here after Shelmaleers won the hurling, and we know Wexford do a split season where they run off the hurling first and then the football, and he thinks that's the better way to go. Have you any opinion on that? I know ye in Tipperary obviously alternate weekend after weekend hurling and football.
Yeah, I think it's probably something that might have suited us other years, because to be honest, up until this year it's been a bit of a disaster at times. We've ended up playing a couple of midweek games, and I think that's been the biggest killer for us. If you have to play, we could be playing hurling on Sunday, next thing you might have to play football during the week, because just purely because it's hard to get the championship finished out the way the structure was. But I suppose the way it is now, where you know that you're only going to be playing every weekend, is perfect. Like it's the midweek ones are a killer. But look, I suppose when there is a lot of teams play, I know there's probably a lot of the North teams don't play a huge amount of football, but the rest of the county, at some level, all clubs would have teams playing hurling and football. So, most players are playing something every week, and it's nice. I like mixing it up. I think it's great that we're going playing football this coming weekend now. It just brings a freshness when we go over training, and it's something different,
right.
It's enjoyable. It's nice to look forward to, like.
Well, I heard your uncle's obviously your manager, which is incredible. He's manager for both the senior hurling and the senior football. So this is, I think this must be unique to Loughmore Castellini, is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure how other clubs work it, but I know now it was probably a little bit before my time playing senior with Loughmore, but there was a stage where different management were over the hurling and the football, and it just didn't work. It was decided in the club, like could be back maybe 15 years ago or around that stage, that there had to be a link between both teams, because you know, if you have a football, you know, when you're playing it so close together in the hurling and football, each manager is going to want as much time as they can, whereas if it's the same fella, or the same couple of guys involved in both teams, it makes it a lot easier, and there's no arguments, and you know, it just, that kind of thing just takes away from it and brings the morale down maybe a small bit. So from that point of view, it's terrific the way we've it set up at the minute.
Yeah, it's definitely a good one. And I was reading that sometimes you might start training with hurling and finish up on football. Now, you're probably not doing that now with the matches coming up, you know, thick and fast. You're probably just uniquely one code. But earlier in the year, you mix up a bit of both in the same session.
Yeah. You know, you might do warm up maybe with a couple of hurling drills and then go into a bit of football. And it's funny, I suppose, there are times there you'd be kind of wondering whether you need to bring the hurlies over or what gear you're supposed to bring training. But no, I think we're just so used to it. Like, we're doing it for so long now. And like I said, it's just that something a bit different. And it keeps everything nice and fresh and everyone really interested.
Yeah, well, you're lucky in that nearly the two panels are almost identical, barring the two goalkeepers.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, out of, I think we used 18 in the hurling the other day, and I'd say there's probably maybe three players to add to that for the football. So you're kind of working off about the same, roughly the same 20 guys for both teams. Like, so it is unique, I suppose, that you're not leaving guys out if you're going football training. It's the same lads are doing it all the time. So it helps that way that there is a huge crossover.
And what are the three lads that are uniquely football doing in a week leading up to a hurling match?
Well, it's not even that. Sorry, I probably didn't get that across the best. No, it's not that they're uniquely football, but they're still playing on the junior hurling team. Like, so it's Yeah, so it's not that they don't have anything to play for or train. Our juniors had a good win in the mid quarter final the other day as well. So like, we've huge numbers in the field at the minute, and like, there's probably there could be 35 to 40 lads over at training, like, which is terrific numbers. Like, it's the best we've had in a long time.
Yeah, geez, it's incredible. And you're like, I mean, for two teams to be one in a county final, the other in a semi-final, like, I mean, to be working off a base of 20 players, like, I mean, it's incredible, really, and playing every single week. I suppose an injury or two, you know, would be a disaster for you altogether.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at, I suppose, with the absence of the midweek games have been a huge help to us, because, you know, you can manage playing a game every weekend, but if you have any bit of a knock, if we have to play a midweek game, you're effectively ruled out for the weekend then, like, which is, you know, it's very tough, because like I said about Nina there, if you're missing two, three players, like, it does get very tough at club level when you're getting to the latter stages playing quality teams.
Yeah, so I suppose, like, I mean, these new GPA proposals that will end the inter-county season the end of July, and then you have August straight through to December for the club. Like, I mean, I presume you'd be in favour of that, considering that would do away with those midweek matches. You know, you'd be playing every weekend then.
Oh, definitely. Like, I think it'd be a brilliant idea, and it gives so much certainty to everyone that you can plan other things, and, you know, lads have other things they like to do in their life as well, and you're not guessing, when am I going to be playing, or can I go do this or that? Like, it just it'll give everyone certainty. And I think we see it in the last couple of weeks and months there. It's certainly the way forward. I think everyone is really, really pleased with the way the championships are being run at the minute. And it seems to be all over the country. It seems to be the way forward.
Yeah, and I suppose another part of that is the intercounty season will be shortened that little bit, where we know how much of a commitment that is. It would still be the same commitment, but just not for the same length of time.
Yeah, like it is a huge commitment. And I suppose, like, depending on your stage of life, then if you've got have demanding jobs and things outside of that, like it is that extra bit harder. If any way you can shorten the season, and it's not about cramming it either. Like there's still adequate time to play all the competitions, and you know you get your bit of rest as well. Then at the end of the year, there's a bit of leeway there where there's time lads can go and do other things outside of the GAA, which is super as well.
Yeah, exactly. Come here. So what's your routine now for this week? So you played the match on Saturday. I presume yesterday you did a bit of recovery. When are you back training with the footballers now, and how does that crank up for the Mile Rovers game?
So we're going training tomorrow night now, Tuesday, and we'll have a light kick round again the evening. It's at a stage where overdoing it. We'll have a nice lively session out tomorrow night where you can't just sleepwalk through the week either, I suppose. You have to, you can't take it too easy. Like, so we're well set now with we've Murta Brennan. He's from Loughmore as well. He's involved with the Defence Forces. He's our S&C this year. He's been a huge help. He's been terrific in anything lads need. So he's really, really on the ball, and he's done work wonders with us.
Right. Okay. So that, I suppose if you're a little bit tight, you know, you wouldn't be doing too much tomorrow night.
I wouldn't say that. No. Like we won't be going too handy. Like whether it's the Tuesday or the Wednesday, we usually have a good, lively hour session. And then later on in the week, it might be a bit lighter. But like I said, I think the worst thing you can do is only barely train all week. You end up, you're sluggish, you're lethargic. It's just, I don't think it's a great way to be going into a game at the weekend. And maybe, like you were saying, with the start to our games, maybe that's something that's helping too.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. Come here, how's the McGrath family dealing with the no supporters thing? Your uncle's the manager, there are three brothers, there's a whole lot of McGraths on the team. I presume you're related as well. I'm sure your extended family are going off their heads, are they?
My mother does be here at home. Oh God, there'll be 101 questions when you come home, I suppose. She used to be there and she'd see it all, but no, the streaming is great, but it is a loss, I suppose, for people not to be able to get to the games. Like there's our parish here in Loughmore and Castellini, like it's the main thing in the parish. Like everyone follows and supports us, and you know we'd always have good crowds going to all the games, whether it's the hurling or the football. And it is a fair loss. Like people are mad to be able to get back going, but at least the club have actually got a bit of a streaming service up going, and the Tip GA have done pretty well with their services so far, so it helps in that regard. But I'm thankful I'm playing anyway, and not trying to be looking over a wall or a gate or anything like that.
Yeah, I was just thinking though, in Semple Stadium there's no easy kind of cheating over a wall. It's all too high, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no hope of getting in there now. Whether out in Borland now, whatever, there'll be people probably trying to look through the gates and stuff. But it is tough on people. Like there's people like that give their lives to it, and you know they're maybe not able to see games and that now. And it is tough, but look, it's the way it is. And I suppose once people follow the rules and the guidelines, hopefully we'll be back and have crowds at games again soon.
Yeah, the sooner the better. Come here, I suppose intercounty is the furthest thing for your mind, is it? Or is it still at the back of your mind? It's knockout. It's not the easiest championship to defend your title.
Yeah, it's tough, I suppose. You've You do have your one chance, I suppose, in the hurling, which is, you know, it's like anyone can have a bad day, and to have that one chance, if it does happen, is great. But yeah, look, hopefully I'll have another couple of weeks with the club before it head back in there. But yeah, look, it's great to be able to look forward to that in another couple of weeks as well. And it'd be nice to retain it, but we'll worry about that in another couple of weeks' time.
Well, you will. I don't know. Traditionally, you don't have the greatest record at retaining them, do you?
No, not in my lifetime, anyway.
or mine.
I think you'd have to go back further to around the 60s or that. But look, I suppose that doesn't have any real bearing on it. This, of all years, this is completely new to everyone. Championship is later on in the year. Whether it be the weather might have a big factor to play in what kind of games we're going to see. But no, look, I think the way it is, everyone is just going to be so delighted to be back and playing. I think back to back is probably out of our heads, and it's just about trying to win this one. And we'll see how we go in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Well, before that, best of luck in your semi final and your final, John. And thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Okay, great stuff from John there. Like, I mean, Conor, Frankie McGrath, manager of the senior hurlers and the senior footballers, what a great idea. What a lot for him to take on. But finally, the politics in Loughmore Castellani are no doubt well reduced. Well, he can't argue with himself over players, so I suppose they are completely done away with.
I thought you were going to repeat the famous Jimmy Sloane line there, Willie, and say the politics in Loughmore Castellani make me sick. But would he have any, you know, leaning towards hurling or football, or is he 50-50 down the middle, which I'm sure he is, and seems to be working for Loughmore Castellani? But like, that must be very refreshing that, like, when you have a manager that's in charge of both, that at least, you know, the players on both sides at least they should be assured that, like, there's no preferential treatment either. But like, good luck to him to be able to take on both. He must be a busy man.
Yeah, he definitely is. So Conal Keeney, they obviously, that was their eighth game in 8 weeks. Conal Keeney is also on a kind of a roll of a game every week between the footballers and the hurlers, because Ballyboden St. Enda's, they beat Nafina. Nafina were 3-0 and Ballyboden scored 1-7 to their point to beat them by 6 points in the end. They got a late goal from a penalty from Paul Ryan. It wasn't probably a 6-point win. It was a brilliant finish for Ballyboden. And they've turned it around big time, because I think you might remember us commenting on this in one of the earlier rounds. It's in the round robin. Kilmacook Croke scored 4 goals against them, 4-18 to 16 points. Now Ballyboden are back in the final. Their manager was commenting on that, Joe Fortune. And he says, people saw where we were at that stage. His full back line were torn apart that day, he said. And he even said that people laughed in the stand at stages during the Kilmacud game. And then he was asked, did he hear them? And he says, I think everybody heard them, to be honest. So Ballyboden St. Enda is one of the big teams. Kilmacud Crokes are as well, by the way. But for the manager to be on the sideline, hearing giggling in the stand behind him. Well, we're talking about motivation. So you have supporters not getting in. You've gotten beaten in the final last year. Well, here's another one, Conor. Fellas giggling at you in the stand. Well, there's your motivation. That's speeches for the rest of the year written already.
I don't think there's any more effective motivation.
No.
There's laughing at you in the stands, Willie. Yeah, geez. And they did. They took a right. They took a right beating off Kilmacud at the start. Now, they just seem to be kind of gradually getting better since. Now, by all accounts yesterday, or by all accounts at the weekend, it was not pretty at all. I saw your man Joe Fortune was saying as well that Anthony Daly once told him that semi-finals are only there to be won, and that's very much the mantra that he took after the game yesterday, because I think they'd only scored 3 points in play or something like that before the last 20, and then relied on their old dogs for the hard road, Conal Keeney particularly. I think you mentioned Paul Ryan got the goal, and Simon Lambert was very good too. So listen, like that, when you're kind of as well as using that motivational tactic when you're winning games and you're not playing well is another cliche, and that seems to be working for Ballyboden as well. So like, they they just be happy to get through, and now a big final against Coolah to look forward to as well. So happy out for them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't want to pick you up on the Anthony Daly semi-finals are for winning, because we remember us trying to figure out what the hell does that mean before on the show. I'm not sure if you were on it, because it was like, what game's not for winning? Like a first round not for winning is a, like, I mean, I don't know where this cliche of semi-finals are for winning actually came out of. They play Coolah in the final, Ballyboden do, and this was almost a carbon copy. Luke and Sarsfields were 7-5 up at half time, and Coolah outscored them 1-6 to a pint in the last 10 minutes. A Sean Moran goal, which he has a habit of doing. I think he's playing wing forward for Coolah now, which is a change of position. He was definitely lined up there on the match report that I read. 1-6 to a pint. So it's Coolah versus Ballyboden in the final there. The game's on Saturday night in Tyrone. Dungannon surprised everybody. This is their first ever, or their first final since 1986, and I think it's the 60s since they actually won it. This is an incredible statistic, that it's their third extra time win on the trot. Like, I mean, we know that Tyrone club football is the most competitive championship in the country. I don't think anyone would disagree with that, in that there's all the teams, I don't know how they've done it, they're all so evenly matched. It's almost like the NFL, where you're allowed, you know, you're allowed some draft pick to keep all the weaker teams stronger. But for a team like Dungannon to surprise their way, three extra time wins on the trot, like, I mean, that's incredible belief for a team that's coming from nowhere and haven't been in a final since 86. Their manager, Chris Rafferty, was talking afterwards. He says it's not about panicking under pressure, about being composed. We talk to them about that and they absorb everything. They're young, they're fit, they work hard on their conditioning, they're conscientious. And I thought they were superb in their temperament as much as their performance. Because the one thing about this is, if a game goes to extra time, and a team scores a goal in extra time, I would love to go back to the history of extra time games and say that 95% of the team that gets a goal in extra time will win it.
Yeah, and that's why you often see teams winning big when games go to extra time. Especially if one team gets a goal in the first half of extra time, it absolutely sucks the life out of a team who are, you know, they're cramping up, they're tired, they've given so much to be so close up to that point, and then just like a goal will just knock the wind out of them completely, and you'll often find that they might concede another goal afterwards and sometimes lose by 10 points or something like that. So yeah, for Dungannon to do it after Chris McGinley, I think, got the goal, and a lovely goal he got, I think it was on the just in first half injury time on Saturday night, that could have easily just kind of knocked the life out of Dungannon. But the amount of belief that you get from having come through three of those in the row, do you know what I mean? It's just I don't know where they're getting the energy in the legs, and right, you're probably going to mention it, but the manner in which they won it as well, with the I call it your man's name escapes me, that the cornerback kicking the 45.
Yeah, Kieran Barker,
nearly last kick of the game, and I wouldn't mind, but like his 45 had yards to spare. Do you know, like you'd be impressed with somebody kicking that, you know, 10 minutes into the first half, never mind at the end of extra time. So, but again, Wooly, what about the Tyrone Championship delivering the goods? Do you know, I don't know, was it you that said that you were expecting a couple of drab encounters when they were first on TV there last weekend? But the quality and the quality of the games and the quality of the drama and the entertainment has been unbelievable. So I'm sure that RTE or TG Garra will be looking to snap up that county final when it's on in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Like, I mean, you'd fancy Trillick in the final. Collie Holmes is training Dungannon. He was with a good few underage teams. You might remember him. You would remember him. He's more kind of a utility player for Tyrone. Nothing special, but kind of a bit of a stalwart to come and do a job for them no matter what way, when they needed it. Paul Donoghue, we talked about him last Thursday, moved from Eden Dark, just down the road to Dungannon. He scored 8. His 3 points from play were sensational. Like, I mean, he got one from the outside of the right from 50 metres, and he got one from outside on the outside of his left from a tight angle way out on the left-hand side. Like, I practiced my left foot a lot and got it pretty good to be able to clip scores over off the inside of my boot, but I never actually practiced the outside. I just went, look, I'm too long in the tooth now. I'm never going to need this. I'm not a scorer. I'm not a showboater. I'm not even going to try. I just needed to be able to clip them over on the run. I can't tell you how skillful it is to be able to score the 2 points that he got off the outside of both of his right and his left foot.
The outside of the left one was as sweet a strike as I think it rarely deviated from its path. It was aimed at the nearly out on the sideline, aimed at the black spot, and just arrowed over. It was unbelievable. So good, in fact, that just watching Usheen McConville in commentary, he had a gasp, an involuntary gasp. He thought it was that good. And then, yeah, you say the other one was kind of the one from the outside of the right was a bit of a floater from 50 yards. But when you mentioned that, like we talked about Paul Donnelly last week, you mentioned the draft there. I wonder, is that how Dungannon got him from Eton Dork? Because it's a massive loss. Otherwise, I think he scored 8 points, I think, in the end.
Yeah.
Just looked like such a classy footballer. So hopefully they'll be on again. Hopefully, like as I said, hopefully TV gets one of the TV stations get that county final, because I think Paul Donnelly might turn into a Tony Brosnan and a Desi Hutchinson and a GAR stalwart if he keeps
Even though we're not in favour of what he did here now. We're not in favour. I'm not against the club transfer, but I'm against the club transfer down to your arch rivals. This just that's just doesn't sit well with me. But look, I like Paul Donaghy as a player, I'm not going to lie. Trillick won as well. They'll be favourites for the final, like I mentioned. Jeez, a feature of this game, right? Plunkett Kane scored an absolute screamer. And then not long after that, Trillick replied with Liam Gray. What's Plunkett Kane and Liam Gray? Two midfielders. What were the two goals? Coming late onto the play with a pop hand pass. And there's one thing about midfielders when they score goals. They roofed him. They buried him. And like, I mean, you know, you're thinking of Jack O'Shea. You're thinking of Kieran Whelan for Dublin. I love that, Ed. It's a traditional part of me that loves a midfielder bombing down the middle, timing his run right and getting that pop pass. And you know the minute he runs onto that, this lad's cracking for goal here. This could rattle the net. It's a beautiful thing to see.
It's gone out of the intercounty game to a certain degree, I'd say.
It is.
You mentioned a couple of names there, and I would say that like the early to mid 2000s was like the peak of the midfielder bursting on to get a goal. So I'm thinking of one of my favourites was Kieran McManus for Offaly.
He could do it, yeah.
I used to get loads of spectacular goals. Owen Brosnan, especially when he just started off.
Great example, yeah.
And the other one I had was Eamon O'Hara from Sligo, who made a habit of it as well and got a couple of big goals, one in a Connacht final against Galway as well. Just timed the run to perfection. Do you know that they're bursting on, they've made the burst from midfield, they get the ball around the, could be around 40 yards, 30 yards from goal. And then not only do they roof it, they shoot from about 14, you know, they don't bring it into the ladies' tee. They don't, you know, there's no gooch like subtle finish or anything like that. It's Stevie McDonald. It's put the head down and absolutely rattle it to the corner or the roof of the net. But what about Plunkett Kane? I had to look at, like, it was only when I was looking up afterwards that he's 35 years old. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, he played really well. Look, there's no doubt there's life in the Plunkett. There's life in Plunkett still. The game on TV yesterday was the Roscommon semi-final. Jeez, I don't know. Do people get carried away with a kind of an exciting end? But I saw this game described in different newspapers as pulsating and, you know, excellent. I thought it was desperate stuff altogether. It was terribly low standard football. Terrible kick passes being given away. No quality forward play. Well, especially from Clonnegale, they were desperate. And it wasn't only for Donny Shine, you know, Pádraig Pearse's would have won it comfortably enough. He scored 1-2 in 5 minutes to amazingly put Clonnegale 2 points up. And they still conspired to lose it. Like, I mean, they allow Pádraig Pearse to get three points at the very end. Any decent football that was kicked, Pádraig Pearse has kicked it. So the best team won the game. But I wouldn't be writing home about Pádraig Pearse's on yesterday's evidence.
No, not me either. You mentioned there about like how people get kind of fooled by, you know, fooled by maybe a good end or something like that. The one thing I will say about the game was that it was close enough all the way through. And if a game is close enough all the way through, people think, oh, yeah, well, at least it was obviously competitive. But don't, like sometimes people mistake that for quality, you know. And I'd agree, like I wouldn't have been blown away by the fair on display. I would say that like a lot of Pearse's good stuff, like they got a lot of men behind the ball, but a lot of their good stuff came from runners coming from deep. And then it was either them taking the scores themselves or kind of doing that classic loop around to a corner forward. Or I think Niall Carty playing centre forward got a couple of scores off that as well. But like the dailies again, I know we seem to mention them any time we mention Pádraig Pearse's, but they seem to have a big impact. And I think Ronan got a couple of big scores, and it was Larkin then that got the score at the end. So they've got Bridget's in the final, so let's see if your man is going to be on that ladder in the graveyard in Hyde Park looking at that.
but they were so poor, some of these, I thought, players, that when the dailies got on the ball, they looked like they were minors playing under 14, or if Ulton Harney got on it, he just looked so much better than ever. You know, when you have club teams that aren't great, the inter-county players look unbelievable. And like Donny Shine coming on scoring 1-2, I mean, your man Murray, the wing-back, went back on Cathal Lennon and completely snuffed him out. He never got a kick of it. And yeah, they do drop a good few players back behind. And Clonagale's only response to it was either to kick aimless ball into the full forward line early, which never really found its man, or else Cathal Shine used to try and shoot. And he must have kicked three or four wides from the 45 off the outside of his boot, trying to do the same thing. So, yeah, I was disappointed by the standard of the game. I know it's a one-off game and, you know, you wouldn't be judging them definitely on that, but it would definitely, I thought, I was very, very disappointed. Two inter-county managers, Liam Cairns over Clonagale and Pat Flanagan over Pádraig Pearse's. And she's like, for the first water break, both Pat O'Shea or Pat Flanagan and Liam Cairns had them in like team meetings, and Pádraig Pearse's went to the level of actually got them into a huddle. Now, like, I mean, I don't want to labour the water break. Like, I mean, we're over that now. It's there. It's there to stay. But there has to be some sort of rule for inter-county where managers will have bigger egos. Managers will think they can, you know, fix anything that's going wrong. That water break is to walk across, pick up your bottle. It shouldn't even be for a rest. You should pick up your bottle, you should take two swigs out of it, and you should immediately walk back to your position. It's not an excuse for a team talk. It's not even an excuse for players to stand over, take a drink, wait for, you know, a little while, take another drink. Okay, you'll accept that. But managers should not be allowed down talking nonsense to their players, and especially like Pat Flanagan, getting them into a bloody huddle.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what the point is, because, well, first of all, I don't know where they get the time. Because when it's like that minute that we're talking about, like, That nearly accounts for everyone having to make their way over to the sideline in the first place. That's the first opportunity anyone's got to have a drink. So all you want to do, you just want to get a breather, get some water into you. You're not really in a position to kind of take on too much information as it is. So, and how much information are you going to be able to deliver when you get like 20 seconds or 30 seconds in a huddle? So like I don't know. They take a bit of getting used to. Like, we played a good few games now, so at this stage it's literally, We barely say anything. You go over, you have your drink of water, and by the time you've had your drink of water, you're in a position to get back onto the pitch. And to be honest, you're conscious of getting back out onto the pitch, especially if you weren't in possession beforehand. Because as we've seen with that famous case in Antrim last week or the week before, I think, if it comes from a kick out, whatever, the team that are in possession are going to try and pull one on you and get a fast kick out away and stuff like that. So, I don't know. Hopefully it's an isolated thing, and I would like to think it's not to do with the fact that Pat Flanagan and Liam Kearns' egos are that big that they feel they have to get them into a huddle. But like, no more than yourself, I don't understand it, and hopefully that's the last we see of it.
Yeah, Liam Kearns, now I like him, but there definitely an argument could be made for the ego there. Pat Flanagan, listen, I think all those inter-county managers have egos. Like, I mean, I do. I think a lot of people often accuse players of having them, but I've seen plenty of evidence in my career of managers getting carried away with themselves, you know, thinking that they're, like, just because I've no doubt that if I became a manager of a team and we got a few wins, I'd be thinking I was feckin' whatever, Jim Gavin going around. Like, you're never too old to start thinking that you're the great fella or anything like that. Like, I mean, especially if you're that way inclined, which I probably would be.
I was about to say, it's not limited in the county level, Willie. Plenty of club managers of ego too, so.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting one. So Pat Flanagan, right, because we obviously know that teams are talking out in the stands. I don't know if you have any experience of this, but the cameras picked him up. He had the chart out in front of his squad. He did the team meeting there in front of the stand, and they were sitting in the first two or three rows, and he had the chart out as he was flipping them over, and I paused it on it, and I was going to take a picture, but I feckin' hit the controls anyways and took it off the pause. But anyways, I moved to another channel. He had, you know, the usual circled words, buzzwords like belief, control, you know, all this. We've seen these 101 different times. Anyone got a word now, you know, that might sum up this group? And then, you know, you'll say some word. Very good. Right. We can work with that. And somebody else will come out with one. There'll be the same four or five coming out with these same buzzwords that they said two or three years previous for the previous manager. And they're the great fellas and they're thinking, and, you know, managers get all enthusiastic about that. But he had he turned over the chart, and then he had this thing, booster ball. And I was wondering what booster ball was. I think it said underneath it, set play. And I want to get to the bottom of that, what the booster ball is for Pearse's. I think it is a set play off the throw-in. But I can't be 100% sure. But I'm not sure if inter-county, man, I think inter-county are going to have dressing rooms. So I was just trying to think, you know, seeing some of the presentations that inter-county managers might go through, it would be a fairly unique insight for people who haven't seen it before. I will say a lot of the nonsense that might be going on before matches that may be slightly unnecessary at times.
There'd be more buzzwords, except to be pinned to walls this time, Willie, as opposed to on a chart. But I don't know why. Like, why does Pat Flanagan feel the need to do that before? Would you not do that? Would that not be
ego?
Something?
Ego. We've explained this already, Connor.
but just from a practical point of view, if you have to be reinforced in messages like that, 10 minutes before a game that you haven't already done a training or something like that, maybe he wanted to get spotted, maybe he wants this to be a completely elaborate ploy that will draw Bridget into a false sense of security now before the final. Bridget will think they have it solved after listening to that and after seeing Booster Ball, and they may come out with a completely different approach for the final. But I would have thought that, like, all that sort of stuff, again, to be honest, it does sound like it's for show, because you shouldn't need to be having to, show a chart with either tactics or buzzwords or whatever it is 10 minutes if the players don't know what they're doing, or if they have to be told about work rate 10 minutes before a game like that from a chart. Well, then there might be something wrong. Obviously, it worked for them yesterday, but I wouldn't be a huge fan.
No, Portlaoise were beaten in Laois. I was a little bit worried about this last Thursday. It's the third time Portlaoise have been beaten since 2007. Well, that should be 2006, because Portlaoise weren't beaten in 2007. I was there at that stage. We won it in 2007, I'm fairly sure. So lost to Greg Cullen in 13 and ended up still winning the county title, and lost to Stradbally in the final. So it's just three losses now in 14 seasons. Disappointing thing is Port Arlington without Colin Murphy, who's their the Laois full forward, who'd be their best forward by miles, and Ronan Coffey as well, who'd be another one of their best players. So that's a little bit disappointing. Port Laois are not firing up front at all. They only scored 1-8 against Ballylinan, who wouldn't be a top team at club level. Like, they would be in maybe they've made a county final, but they wouldn't be anywhere near Port Laois's standard. They only scored 1-8 against them, and then only scored 10 points against Port Arlington, and only four of them were from play. Unlike Port Laois. I think Graham Brody even ended up in midfield. So Port Laois are not out. They have another chance. A friend of mine, Kevin Fitzpatrick, is over them this year, and they are in transition, but definitely need to get back to the drawing board, and they need to turn it around, because they easily can. There should be no panic for Port Laois yet, but they definitely need to click up front a little bit, because those they've a very young forward line and they are in transition, but those kind of scoring rates would be very un-Port Laois like.
You've been sounding the alarm bells about Port Laois for a while though, Willie. So, like, I was about to ask you, is this, when you say third defeat in 14 seasons, is this just another hiccup? Is this just another Greg Cullen 2013 or Scott Valley?
No, not really. Now, to be honest, no. Kevin took the job because he didn't really want it. He's been in for it the last couple of years and nobody wanted it. And it is in transition, and people can see that the dominance is going to end at some stage. So you'd have to say fair play to him for taking it over, as an ex-player when nobody else wanted it. But it's definitely in and around a time now where Port Laois's scalp is seen as there for the taking in Laois, whereas the fear would have been there for an awful lot of teams obviously after winning all those, in a row. But I don't think that, and that result against Port Arlington definitely isn't going to help that kind of fear factor, because that's half the battle Port Laois would have won before they even go out in the field. That's just the way it was. They were so dominant and so good that maybe teams see that Port Laois forward line now, see how young it is, see that the leaders are kind of gone out of it, and they're probably saying, we can take them here. And unfortunately for Port Laois, they didn't get an easy draw. They've St. Joseph's next. And we mentioned St. Joseph's. They've got Joe Higgins and Mick Dempsey, who was over Kilkenny with Brian Cody for so long. They got a pretty poor draw in that loser's draw now. So it's Port Laois or Joseph's, one of the bigger teams. And Joseph's aren't exactly one of the bigger teams, but I suppose with that management team this year, a lot would have been expected of them. So that's definitely a huge game. That'll be next weekend. Monaghan semi-finals, a bit of drama in these ones. So Ballybay needed extra time to beat Inniskeen. Inniskeen is Oisín McConville's team. This I actually had to stop and actually calculate this. It was 419 to 125. When you see that scoreline and it takes you a second to go, who actually won that game? Did 419 or the 125? But there were 2-6 to 5 points up at half time, and then Innes Skeen scored 1-4 without reply. Andrew Woods, if you get a chance to put this in, I don't know if it's doing the rounds on Twitter, I was sent it. He scored a goal from midfield, not like the goal we're talking about with Plunkett and the other midfielder, Gray. He actually just got the ball in midfield and ran himself the whole way and stuck it into the bottom corner. So it was a brilliant midfielder. That inspired Innes Skeen back into the mix. And they ended up winning it with a great goal in extra time from Shane McGuinness. I saw this goal as well. And this was he's centre forward. He came off a breaking ball, long ball into the full forward line, picked up the break. Momentum carried him through and he buried it low into the net as well. So there's your goal in extra time that sends you on to win the game, Connor.
Yeah, that was the killer. I went looking for that Andrew Woods goal on Twitter, Woody. I couldn't find it. There was no clips doing the rounds, but I did see it described as somebody described it as the greatest goal I have ever witnessed. There was an Irish Times match report about the game, and they said that Andrew Woods, they described his performance as majestic. So by all accounts, he had a massive game. But again, that as we said earlier on, just goals make the difference. Like you can't really be expecting to concede four. I know three of them were in normal time and win the game, but what a game that sounded like. Do you know, like that was 419, that's 23, like 48 scores or something like that. You know, and like I don't know about modern football, whether it be tagged with having a traditional kind of defensive setup that a few counties might have been tired with that approach, but that's definitely not the case. And that seems to be the case for any club football, maybe Barry Pierce's and Clonagill that we were just talking about. That.
Yeah, but to be fair, we're moving away from all that defensive. So I think that's a thing of the past. We shouldn't be surprised now that teams, you know, that games are higher scoring for two reasons. Teams are not as defensive as they used to be, and other attacking teams are much, much better at breaking down any defensive system. That there's two reasons for us seeing much more exciting games.
Yeah, yeah. But all the better. Like, you know, long may it continue, you know, because for a while there was just a copycat culture that, like, if you saw defensive football in Inter County, it just permeated its way down to clubs. And the problem was is that, like, the teams weren't playing at as sophisticated a level as Inter County and weren't kind of, it didn't make for great viewing Inter County level, but it made for worse viewing at club level. Yeah. So, like that tide seems to be turning, very welcome development. And if it gives us more games where we're getting 419 to 125, I mean, who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah, Ballybay play Scotstown. Scotstown are into their eighth final in a row. They were obviously shocked last year by Clontibret, who ended up in the relegation semi-final or whatever. I think they won that anyways. They won't be relegated. So Scotstown are in the final. They beat Carrickmacross easily. And I'd say they'll be favourites to beat Ballybay in the final of that. We'll finish up on this one. Is Killoe. They finally got their appeal. They went to the DRA. And I'm not going to read out the ruling because it'll be a little bit confusing, but the Longford County Board got it wrong anyways. They used some rule 6.24C, which was not appropriate. That's the 48-week ban. I think from my reading of it, and I'm not a lawyer, and I only read it quickly because it's boring and I had enough of other stuff to do, is that there was two rules. There was two rules here, the rule for not fulfilling the fixture, and then there was the ban. And apparently the two rules that they used, one didn't follow on from the other. They applied them wrong, and they're after successfully appealing the 48-week ban. So now they have to play next week. I think they're two rounds behind to catch up. But it's good news for everybody that has been sorted out. And again, not good news for a county board which got this badly, badly wrong. Shocking PR exercise for the Longford County Board. You don't have to be a genius to know that a team that doesn't show up to a game and has appealed that process, that they should not be kicked out for 48 weeks until that appeal has been heard. So due process was not followed, and it's been an own goal by the Longford County Board.
Yeah, well, that's it. And the DRA ruling proved that, Woolly, that, like, we were all, well, I certainly was speculating whether there was more to it than that. That's simply not fulfilling the fixture and getting a 48-week ban. But that the DRA ruling has proved that was literally the charge that was laid against them, and that's why they were getting the ban. And it was 16 pages. I flicked through, Woolly. The one thing I saw repeatedly was use of the word draconian, draconian ban. And essentially what I read of it was that, like, because Killoe Emmets ended up paying the fine, that the punishment didn't, the 48-week punishment didn't apply. Now, the DRA did say that had they not paid the fine, which they did 10 days later than they were meant to, they said it might have been a different ruling. But listen, I think everyone will be, well, certainly anyone that I've been talked to, or any, you know, the perception that I have of it, that common sense has absolutely prevailed. And yeah, that, you know, it's a regrettable period for Longford, and that this doesn't look well on them. But listen, the championship is back. Kilmore are in it. And hopefully that'll be the last of the controversy as far as they're concerned.
Yeah, last one is Zach Toohey had to wait. He's stuck on 199 here. We're waiting for his 200 appearance. The Geelong released a video, a lovely little video, and geez, he's a monster of a man. There's no doubt about that, Zach. He's a freak. Some of his catches, some of his kicks, some of his performances, even some of his interviews. So if anyone wants to search that online, it's there. So he's stuck on 199. He took a huge hit last weekend. He actually congratulated the fella that hit him and told him he'd buy him a pint afterwards. So finished out the game. They came back and beat the Bulldogs last weekend. And he was interviewed afterwards saying that it was a fair old hit and he was going to buy your man a pint that hit him. But apparently he hurt his ribs and he couldn't play at the weekend. I think Geelong won anyways. So he's stuck on 199 appearances, but it's only a matter of time before he gets to that.
That must have been a huge hit. Like, I mean, we've talked about it often, how durable Zach Toohey has been, how big he is, how kind of physically important he is as well. So for somebody to, for him to describe it as the hardest hit he's felt in all his time in Australia must have been a big one. But just that video, Willie, if anyone hasn't seen it, I'd really advise them to seek it out, because not only is it a brilliant illustration of kind of everything that Zach Toohey has done, but you wouldn't want to be too emotional watching it, because the contributions made by his parents, I thought in particular, and by his wife and his kids, were just really, really touching, and just show how proud they are, as you've said, how proud people from Leash are of everything that Zach has done. So just if you are, I would seek it out, but just be, you might want to pretend you're chopping some onions in the kitchen if you have to explain why you're crying afterwards.
A big softy, Connor. You're a big softy. I didn't feel one kind of emotional, not even an ounce of emotion did I feel going. But there's obviously something wrong with me. You cry at movies and stuff. I just can't bring myself to get to that level. But anyways, listen, I'm talking complete nonsense here now. We'll go here and we'll be back on Thursday and we'll preview next weekend. Like I said, it's all cranking up now. We're heading towards county final time in most counties, so the show will start ramping up from here on in. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.